It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.
Can you hear me?
Hi.
Can you see me?
I can see your cute little feminist hat. Oh, but that's a picture.
Oh, here we go.
Hey. Hi, friend.
Hi, it's been too long.
I know. I can't believe it. I feel like I'm having withdrawals from the retreat.
I think I am too. I've not seen a normal human being
in a while.
Consistently.
So we are now currently on the Millennial Mija podcast.
Oh my god, that was so fast.
Well, no, I mean, I know I didn't give it like a hey, what's up, but this feels this is a different way that I've done it before. I've never done it like via Zoom like this. So this is a new format for me. So welcome back to the Millennial Mija podcast. I am here today with a friend of mine, Jennifer, who is a LCSW, correct? Which is a licensed clinical social worker. And in addition to being the bad bitch that she is, she also came on the retreat with us. And so that was the reason why this conversation kind of got started, was because we were just sitting there eating our breakfast burritos, and then Jen attacked me.
Look at her!
She brutally assaulted me with her comment. And I forgot what exactly how it came out, but she said, "I don't think you have ADHD. I think you have PTSD." And then it was like, boom, bitch. So let's just like rewind a little bit, Jen, and tell me what you do and how that relates to this topic.
Okay, so I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm a psychiatric social worker, and I've been a therapist for now like 9 years. 9 years. So, I actually went into the sector not knowing what I was going to do, and the universe doing what it does. It shoved me back into my community. So my first job was back in Pasadena in my own community, and I never thought I would come back. And then I was there, and I was working with children, and most mental health agencies are through Medi-Cal. So that's our biggest population, is low income families.
Yeah,
that's our only population. We can't, most of our providers don't take cash pay or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I was working in Pasadena, Altadena, and Duarte, doing trauma-based cognitive behavioral therapy. So I just happened to be, because there's this huge push through LA County to support evidence-based practices in therapy.
Thank God.
And so, right? So through Proposition, I believe 60, where anybody who makes over $1 million gets taxed, and all the funding goes to these types of therapy models that are supposed to be somewhat evidence-based. And I have my own, I mean, I think every therapist who's been in the field for a while has their feelings about that. Because it's very like, we're going to track and statistically figure out like how kids get better. And it's like,
that's not how it works.
But no. Yeah.
It's way more qualitative than that.
Exactly. And I'm like, if I'm ever a researcher, I'm going to be a qualitative researcher. I can't be thinking that a child is going to be happy for the rest of their teenage years because I did this one therapy model with them.
Yeah.
And I have to prove that to get money to make sure I can give them more therapy. Like, that to me is not okay. And so I, on record, I definitely was like, I'm not going to follow and adhere to this very like box, like check off every box, do this very like ticky-tacky version of therapy.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot from it. So a lot of the people who started TFCBT are great, great pioneers when it comes to trauma-informed care. And I love them, and all of our teachers were phenomenal. And I looked at the model and I said, okay, how can I make this work for each child and their specific needs?
Yeah.
Because what I started to see is that the people, you know, the heads of all these huge systems and departments are like, why is this kid still in therapy? And it's like, it's trauma. Yeah. It's trauma-based therapy, and it's, there is no, like, checklist that you can go down with them that's gonna have them self-regulated in 22 weeks.
Yeah, it's because I think that it's a lifetime of like unlearning that would have to happen. It's like it's this crazy idea that that all people are the same enough to where you could say, okay, well, it took this person 30 days, so technically it should take this person 30 days. Like, that's just not how humans operate, and I think,
or should we?
Because we will, if we all acted or like, or pretended to have the same experience, then it would just like, it takes away from, I guess, the beauty of the diversity of experiences that we can have, you know, like when we share stuff on the retreat and everything about, it was so interesting to me how so many different, experiences of pain,
mm-hmm.
like at the root of what we were processing was pain, but the experience of that pain was so dramatically different from person to person as we went around, you know. And that was something that I think opened my eyes a lot too, to just like the fact that what we're doing when you heal yourself or when you make an attempt to you know, you give permission to other people to heal themselves, but whatever their pain is. And so that's why talking about this is so important. That's why I'm so glad you joined me, because I know you have like all of the gems on this topic. I know you do.
I know. It's something that I kind of kept to myself. I'm like I was like a OG TFCBT. That's what the acronym for it. TFCBT therapist, and I did like the most cases, and I was like the only one that can complete it. And then I was like, this is weird. Like, how come I'm the only one that can complete it? And then I looked at the ticky-tacky, like, checklist that these creators, you know, wanted us to enforce. And the thing that I did the most was not enforce that. Mm. Is that, and
you did the opposite of what the colonizer says to do. That's what Thea Monnier, quote, Thea Monnier. Whatever the colonizer says to do, do the opposite, and that will heal you.
Lord, that's like the real truth, is that I spoke to each child and I tailored everything to their needs in the moment. Yeah. Because my bosses are telling me, I don't understand why you're doing 90-minute sessions. And I was like, I don't understand how you can do 50-minute sessions, de-escalate a client in 50 minutes, process a trauma, and then shoo them out the door.
Yeah. Like,
that's not ethical, nor is it correct, nor is it therapeutic.
It's therapy. Like it's therapy fast food. Like, it's a fast food model of therapy.
Exactly. And that's, I constantly got reprimanded for having 90-minute sessions, for not, like, finishing things quick enough with clients. And I was
They just want a turnaround.
They wanted a turnaround, and they wanted the 24 weeks or 24 sessions, and mine would last, I want to say, double that, probably 50 sessions. But it was because the first like 12, you're
bullshitting.
These kids are trying to like,
they're trying to bullshit you. They don't want to talk about it. They barely create a relationship with you to tell you your deepest, darkest secrets. Come on. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't even know you.
They have like 3 sessions for rapport building, and I'm like, yo, like, nobody in the history of ever has ever been like, oh, I fully trust this person after 3 50-minute dates.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's not sure. Happened,
especially kids who have been through trauma who are extremely guarded.
Hello, trust issues, like, number one, PTSD, like, you don't trust anybody. Yeah. You're hypervigilant. Like, yeah, of course.
Speaking of that word, I was just, so because I am like, I am the, what I thought to be, the student that has ADHD, so I would like live up to this role of being like, well, I'm just a procrastinator. So I started getting shit together for this episode about 15 minutes ago.
Me too. Me too.
So I was like watching a couple videos, and then I like scanned a couple articles, because I know in general, I know that I already know this because I lived it, but I wanted to like get some words. So when you said the word hypervigilance, I was listening to this lady talking about the difference between inattention versus hypervigilance. And like, they're pretty much the same thing, because she's saying there's a difference between not being able to pay attention because you're scanning for threats. Exactly. You know, and because, and then she was talking about how, you know, the symptoms of ADHD and PTSD are both the same. So it's prefrontal cortex is shut down, aggressive, tantrums, easily frustrated, trouble with memory, disrupting, impulse control, less cognitive flexibility, bad organization skills, threatened by noise, loud noises, can't concentrate, inattention, and hypervigilance. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally gave a TED talk on this, bro, like owning this diagnosis so much.
But you did have all the things that you listed.
Yeah, but it's just a way of looking at it that's very, like, so colonized to where you live up to what they created for you. Because, oh, this is what I was going to tell you. So I started listening to that book, The Body Keeps Score.
Yes.
So this is my first time, and this is the one you had told me about. And I'm like, what the fuck? Because this man is saying that when he became a therapist or something in 1982, basically just a couple years before I was born, it was in the book that incest was like extremely rare, that it would only happen to 1 in 1 million women. And when he started, and it was like and then the definition for incest between men and, or between fathers and daughters was almost like basically co-signing it, saying that it causes no psychological effects later in life. And I was like, when I heard that, and then I just made the connection between like my own shit, like I'm living in a creation of somebody who I don't know their intentions of why they created that diagnosis or what it was supporting or why, you know what I mean?
And so it was a white man, I can assure you.
Yeah.
It was a white man, just like Freud was a white man. And yes, it's always a white person creating the treatments. It's always a white person creating these evidence-based practices. Like, if you look at like those books, if you look at even half of my schooling, it was so outdated. Most of the people who went to school before 2000, bruh, they're like, and I hate to say this, but it's like another era where liking somebody of the same sex was a diagnosis. Yeah. And it's like, okay, this is very like close-minded, and you would think like this is a profession, a helping profession that should be very open-minded, that should
be understanding about change and how, like, because you know we talk about cognitive flexibility, like the inability to admit when you're wrong or to change your mind when presented with new information is like, I don't know, like what do they expect? Because what it was saying in there, he was talking about how PTSD, he actually left his job because he left something because he wanted to add post-traumatic stress disorder into the DSM, and they were adamantly opposed to it. They sent him a letter back saying like, oh, you know, into the VA, the VA diagnosis shit. And so he left there because they were like, no, we don't believe that that's in the best interest of the VA to add that as a diagnosis for our clients as veterans. And now their entire care is based around it being PTSD. But I mean, like, he left his job, and I'm thinking as a person who's in this industry and who is like having to like torn between wanting to help people and then pushing too far that you won't be able to technically help them because then you lose your job. So like, what's that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was a perfect example of that. I left like outpatient, like regular therapy interactions 3 years ago. I have my own private practice, but just the system and the way it was created and the way it's reinforced is very taxing and tiring. Like, therapists are basically like factory workers. Mm. Is as many people you can get in one day is what they want. And they don't really, nobody really cares for your own mental health, which is like a,
yeah.
like, mm-hmm. what is happening? Like, the irony of this.
Crazy. And so that's irony, for sure.
That doesn't surprise me that he would leave the VA, and now the VA is all about trauma-centered care.
Yeah.
But it's a common thing, and it's a common thing for therapists to burn out. And a lot of us leave the profession because it's a lot. It's a lot of vicarious trauma that happens because you're listening to trauma after trauma, because I haven't encountered anybody who doesn't have trauma, some sort of it.
Yeah.
And so when you're listening to that 8 hours a day, and then having to go home and function and talk to your partner or talk to your family is really...
Or have, like meaningful relationships, because you're all like, man. I remember that from working at the teen center. I used to get residual trauma and then take it to my therapist for my therapy session. Like, she'd be like, what's going on with you? And I'm like, just burst into tears because my student's father was killed last night. Like, by the Pasadena PD. And the kids are in my office, and I had to carry that for them, with them. And then as soon as they left, 30 minutes before they got to the... I was still sobbing. And then 10 minutes before I had to open the door for the teen center, because I knew what was going to happen. I was going to have to explain this man's, their friend's dad's death to them, who were 12 and 13 years old, who are like, but the cops are supposed to help us. Like, you told us we're supposed to trust the cops. And then I'm just like, oh my God, I don't even know how to handle this. And I'm like, 10 minutes before, I'm like putting on my makeup, like pretending like I didn't just cry the whole day since I found out, and then just go to work. And then I took it to this lady, and she was just like, it was so uncomfortable for me watching her listen to my story that I shut down and never talked about it again. I just never even brought anything else like that to her. So I never got to process any of that, because I could see how visibly uncomfortable it was making her, because that experience was simply just so far away from hers, being a, you know, a white woman therapist in her, you know, mid-60s. You know, pretty taken care of. Like, it was sad, and for me to see her face and then to feel like kind of how I felt when I was a kid, and then just shut down again. Like, oh, this, I'm not safe here, so I'm gonna just write about it in my journal
and pray. And that's another thing that's a great topic, is like all these, you know, all of my therapists were older white women or older Jewish white women, because there's a lot of Jewish white therapists out there.
Giving advice.
There's a lot of us newcomers. I think a lot of, like, the new social work graduates, a lot of us are Latinos, which I'm very proud of, because there's a lot of us going to school for MSWs, and I see them, and I'm more than happy about that, because I can see the care that goes into even us just speaking the same language.
Yeah.
And there's been trauma work that I've done with children and their parents, because one of the components of TFCBT is a conjoint session where they share the trauma. Yeah. And that's been that's a huge revelation that I've kind of come to, and I'll get back to that in a second, but the conjoint session, if you don't speak the language or have some type of understanding with that parent, that conjoint session is literally everything you're working for, because them taking out the trauma, them expressing the trauma, them processing the trauma is all fine and dandy, but what you're seeking is someone that they can, after therapy, can hold on to. A trusting individual, a trusting person in their lives that's long-term, that they can share this moment with and share their trauma with, and then continue to process. And so knowing Spanish, okay, now I can have this child and this parent do this trauma narrative in English and Spanish, share the narrative in their native tongue, how they feel comfortable, and the parent can do the same. And so it's more healing that way.
Yeah. Because you have to translate your pain, and sometimes it's not translatable.
And it's not, it doesn't matter. Like, you can share, that's one thing that I learned, is that you can have a therapist and share for years and years and years, But if you don't have someone to go back home to and share that, or like we did in our retreat, sharing that in a communal space where there's love and unconditional support, and then you can go on in life and know that those people are there by your side or at arm's length, yeah. That's what keeps you going. Mm-hmm. It's not really like them sitting with me in a therapy office.
Yeah, because their relationship, my relationship with my therapist, like, it's not going to go any farther than that.
Exactly.
Like, she's my teacher, essentially. Like, you know, or she calls herself my springboard, because I just be figuring stuff out and be like, let me tell you what I thought about. And then, but I can talk to her, and that's the difference between me, like, even if I am just, like, you know, making the connections myself, it's having someone who I trust enough to tell these things to work them out. Otherwise, they just stay in. And that was just her and she's Latina. She's younger. She's Latina. And it just was easy for me to talk to her. It was just, that's the only way I can describe it. It was just not, I wasn't as guarded automatically. And that's the only thing I can attribute it to, is the fact that we identify culturally.
Yeah, and I always tell people when I'm trying to lean people into therapy, I'm always like, therapy is like dating.
Yeah.
And people are going to trigger you, because that's what people do. I mean, white women trigger me to my core. Same. Like, I'm scared of them. Mm-hmm. And so I know that if I walk into a room and it's a white woman, I'm going to be like, okay, I'm scared. I don't feel safe. Like, and I, as a therapist, can work through that. But not everyone is going to sit there, because that's the reason why you're going to therapy, is to process mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, knowing that it's okay to, like, look, like, make sure, call them on the phone. I would listen to their voice, and I was like, I don't like her voice. Like, her voice is, like, really triggering me. Like, it's just not the one. So I wouldn't call them back.
Yeah.
Or I would, so I always tell people, like, this is a dating experience. You have to I've been through like maybe four or five different therapists, maybe six. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think my fifth one was like, she was the mastermind, and she did EMDR, which was backed by the VA and specifically for PTSD. And that was finally the process that kind of launched me into where I am today. And it's kind of, it's like the adult version, more, research-based version of TFCBT. It's like the OG. Like, that's the one.
That's what it came from.
That's the best treatment that I've ever seen and experienced myself. And I think it was the moment that when I experienced it myself, I was like able to see I could look back and say, like, okay, these other treatments, this is what they're missing. Mm-hmm. Or these are the components that need to be, like, longer.
Yeah.
Because I experienced it. And then I was like, I would have like 2-hour sessions. And I was like,
where did you find, were you on, are you, oh, you were not on Medi-Cal. I'm on Medi-Cal. So, like, how did you, so with your therapist that you're talking about, like, you got them through your insurance, through your job?
So, and I think they for sure take Medi-Cal to it. Their name is Soul Tenders, and they're a great organization. Shout out Soul Tenders. I refer everybody to them.
I will write it down.
They have beautiful, like, facilities. They have multiple locations. They have great therapists. And I looked for months, and I think that was just divine timing, that it was like I had to learn how to do it on my own for a little bit and then jump into therapy. But EMDR was what kind of shook me in the right direction.
Can you give a little summary on what that is?
So EMDR is a type of therapy.
What does it stand for?
Ooh, eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing.
Okay.
So it's based on your eye movement, and it kind of feels like you're being hypnotized, but you're not. And it's basically a reprocessing of your trauma.
So you have to go through them again.
Yes. And that was because I noticed that I went to therapy for maybe give or take 3 to 4 years, and I was in the same hole, and I couldn't understand why I couldn't get out of the hole. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, something is not working. And it's, and I, of course, it's me. I'm not working. This is all going downhill, and I'm going downhill with it, and then I'm not working. And so I did something else that was like a training, which is kind of like a, was an in-person, in vivo training. And it was a leadership training. It's really therapy. And it's free for veterans. It's called ELP, Elevated Leadership Program. And I went to that because I was like, something needs to change. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to figure it out because of my PTSD, the confusion, like cloudiness is like constant. Yes, the cloudiness. So I felt like constantly cloudy, and I felt, and I didn't know I had PTSD at that moment. Like, I knew I had trauma, but I didn't know the depth of my own trauma. And so, but I knew in my soul and my heart that something was wrong, and I didn't know how to get to it. And I went to therapy, and they didn't really know, and or they were doing OG, like talk therapy, and it just wasn't really directive. And I'm a person that needs structure because of my PTSD. Like, I love structure, I love predictability, because that's what makes me feel safe. Us wandering in the abyss, it does not make me feel safe. So I was like, I need a structured environment. And shout out to a friend who told me about ELP, who she also is very, has very similar experiences to me in childhood. So she was like, this is like 5 years of therapy in one dose. And I was like, shut up.
Okay.
So I need to get into this. So I sign up, and I'm, when I'm ready for something, I dive in head first. Like, I'm just like, take me, Jesus, like, Jesus, take the wheel. I'm ready to go. So I signed up. I paid money, and I was like, I don't even know how or what the fuck is going to happen. I just, like, signed all the papers.
Was it like a one-day thing? Or how many days?
So it's 2 weekends, and it was, like, 3 days. And I'm thinking, like, I'm going to classroom, and they're going to, like, we're going to learn shit, and I'm going to feel better. Okay. That was my, like,
yeah.
I was like, they're going to light a fire under my ass, and I'm ready for it. So I go to this thing, and one of the leaders is like an MFT. So she's like warm and comforting, and she's kind of going over therapeutic stuff. So I'm like watching her, like, okay, this is like super therapeutic. Like, this is kind of weird. Cause I'm like seeing how the framework that she's setting up is therapeutic, except we're in a room with like 40 people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where is this gonna go?
Yeah, how is this gonna happen?
So what ends up happening is that it's literally exposure therapy. So exposure therapy is like, there's different types of experiences that you like recreate. So if you're like angry at your father, you're gonna recreate that and then pretend he's there, and then you're gonna like yell. Like we call it the empty chair technique. So there's different techniques like throughout therapy that have been created. So what these people have done is that they totally created a program where it's actually experiential therapy.
Whoa. So you like recreate, like it's a scene in a movie or something? You like, is there props?
In now and present, and you let it all out.
Is there props?
Like,
do they try to make it look like your house or something? Like, how far do they go with this?
No, you're like in a hotel, conference room. That's like the oddest part.
Oh, okay.
So I'm doing this thing, and I'm like, okay, I know this is therapeutic. I know whose theory this is. So I'm trusting the process, in my gut. Like, okay, I know that this isn't weird or crazy. Like, it might look weird, but I'm just gonna do it. So I'm going through this process, and other people start to come into your world. So it's a group thing, right? So at one point they start to bring people together, and they
have had similar experiences.
I can't.
Oh, they brought people together who had similar experiences?
No, they like grouped us.
Okay.
Like, you three are gonna work together on this thing. So it was supposed to be like everyone yelling like crazy shit at you, and you're supposed to speak back. So it's kind of like if you're a person who's had verbal abuse or emotional abuse in your life, it's almost like it's in vivo, it's happening, and you are supposed to respond.
Yeah, because in your life you didn't.
Yes. And so
it's like an alternate ending for your life. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but it's like alternate ending for your life. Like you get to redo.
Yeah, reprocessing. Yeah, and that's kind of what EMDR does too. So I'm in the moment, and this is how disconnected I was from my trauma. I was in the moment, and I came out of my body.
Dissociation.
Exactly. So I dissociated, and I have never dissociated for that long. I had dissociated many times in my life, but I didn't really know what it was.
Yeah, me either.
I kind of felt like I was frozen. And I was staring out, but I would come back. So in this moment, everyone is yelling, and I literally left. And when everyone stopped, and I was still gone. And so one of the girls, like, she shook me, one of the leaders, she was like, "Hey, you didn't say anything." And I was like, "What the fuck happened?" Like,
yeah.
What was I supposed to do? Like, my memory, gone.
Yeah.
I was totally frozen. I had no idea that I had dissociated until she shook me, which is like the physical, like, come back to life, which is usually what happens to us. So I come back to life, and I'm like, what the fucking fuck? And then my therapy brain is like, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And so that was the first moment where I realized that I dissociated, because all the other ones were kind of short, and I could wake myself up, I could tap myself back in and speak. But that was like a really big moment for me, for really like in terms of awareness, and like, yo, this is like a real thing, like you really have this.
Do you think it's because, like, you know, as kids with trauma or whatever, you kind of like you learn to gaslight yourself, and in that situation you couldn't, because there was all these people around you who was like, girl, wake up. Like, so it's like the first time you couldn't gaslight yourself about it.
No, I was, I was like in a, and I felt like that was a safe environment. So for them to like, for me to completely disengage like that was kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, okay, if I do this here, I for sure do this in the real world.
Yeah.
And then I started to notice it more, because then I knew what it felt like, and I knew what it looked like.
Yes.
And so that really helped me kind of when I'm in a relationship and we start arguing, and I feel like I literally just look far away.
Yes. That's exactly what it is.
I didn't realize that's what it was. conflict. Lord.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm like, I never knew what it felt like either until I started like learning, like talking about this stuff at all. And the word, I learned what the word was recently, dissociating. I learned what that was when I was taking the class before coronavirus hit. I was taking the DBT class, dialectical behavioral therapy, which I started taking after I got the diagnosis for BPD. But I had tried to do that same... I had tried to do this workbook, this skills workbook of dialectical behavior therapy with that one therapist that I had mentioned before. And it just, like, nothing stuck. Like, I didn't... The reason why it didn't stick is because I had no idea why I had these problems. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand. Like, it was just like, I know I get frustrated easily. I know I can't control myself. I know all this stuff. And in the book, they're saying, like, this is what the problem is, and this is a way to fix it. So I'm like trying to do it, but I need to know why, and knowing why has changed everything, because then I can get to know myself deeper, and I can see a way out before I couldn't. And that's why I think, like, I always want to talk about this stuff, because even if it is kind of like, I don't know, I feel sometimes like I overshare, but I feel like I'm trying to do it because I feel desperate almost for the people who don't know this yet, because I know how it feels not to know it, and to feel so desperate, like lost, like, why does my life feel like this? And exactly. I'm like, when you're talking about that dissociating thing, like, it just brings back a memory, like, of me just this past year, like, talking. It was like we were watching a fight or something at my ex-boyfriend's friend's house, and I was acting normal. I remember being normal, and then this girl started talking about her birthday plans, and I completely went away because I was having a really hard time with that. Like, I didn't have any. My birthday was, I think we had the same birthday. And, like, to just hear all of the stuff that her family was doing and all this, and then not having that, I had to leave the whole earth. And my ex was like, are you okay? And then he pushed me, and then I felt, the only reason why I think I woke up is because I felt him get annoyed. And I was like, wait, what? And then I was like, that's when I was like, oh, no, that just happened. That's what that was. Like, I went somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know. I just think, like, when you start understanding what's happening, the road to healing becomes more clear.
Because, and that's one thing in therapy that I did learn, like, in school, is, like, which will make a lot of sense to you right now, is that if you don't have the right diagnosis and you're throwing some type of treatment that's for this certain diagnosis, mm-hmm. you're on the wrong path.
Yeah.
Period. You're not on the right path. So you're not going to show any progress.
Yeah.
And so that's what I learned. Like, I remember they would, like, our supervisors would hound us. Like, how do you know that's the one? How do you know that this person is depressed? And they would hound us because they want you to make sure that when you give a diagnosis, that's a start button to one type of path
treatment.
Of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we're so narrow-minded, if we hit the depression button, we go one way. If we hit the anxiety button, we go the other way.
Wow.
But PTSD is all of those in one. It's yeah. depression, it's anxiety, it's hypervigilance, it's flashbacks. So it's like a lot of people get, like, bipolar disorder to me is and historically in our profession is over diagnosed. Like, people have over diagnosed brown and black people historically with bipolar disorder for decades.
Why do you think that is?
Because they didn't know what the fuck was going on. That's like, I sincerely think they don't know. And so, like, autism was a psychotic disorder, and they would put people with autism in institutions
yeah.
with people who were actively psychotic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Temple Grandin was such a great pioneer and be like, I'm not fucking psychotic, I'm just fucking different.
Like, yeah, like I'm just a genius.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a genius and I need different type of stimuli. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stimuli that, like, sensory things that people with autism have, I feel that people with PTSD have, because my pain tolerance is absolutely out of this world.
Really?
And I'm like, why is my pain tolerance so high? I think it's because I dissociate.
Yeah.
So, and, like, I could run like fucking Forrest Gump. I'm not even trolling. I could run for days without training, without the right food. I used to drink, be hungover, run hella miles. And I was like, why? This is weird that my body can do this.
Yeah.
And not have, like, real repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, I have the ability to go in my head for days.
Yeah.
I can go in there and I could live in there and I could, like, talk to myself for days. And it's like, I'm not psychotic.
Yeah.
I'm just.
That's a survival. That's a response to, threats. Like, it's a survival tool, survival mechanism. Like, when we were talking about, you know, the comparisons between ADHD and PTSD, why do you think so many people are misdiagnosed with ADD versus PTSD?
So one of the biggest things that doctors just recently came up with is that researchers have this ACE study. And so you get to take this, like, standardized test that's hella boring, that asks you if you've experienced violence, trauma, and things of that sort. So they started to see the correlations and, like, oh, a lot of these people have super high ACE scores.
ACE?
Oh, ACE, so it's yeah. ACE. And it's, like, it basically asks you, like, Do you have any emotional abuse, physical abuse, neglect, violence in your community, violence in your home, domestic violence, sexually abused? So you go down the list of trauma, and people were finally starting to ask these questions. Mm. And then Vanderhoff was like, or the guy from the Body Keep Score says, oh, look, all of our people, our veterans have the same symptoms
as other people that have not been in war but have experienced all these bullshit trauma.
I mean, if you think about slavery, Jim Crow era, like, all those things are so traumatic. And then all the things that come after that, where we start to abuse our own children, where we start to be angry all the time and use alcohol to cope with all our traumas. Mm-hmm. So there's no way to kind of stop that. That's like a snowball effect that just takes all of our people down.
Yeah.
Look, because it starts historically, and then here we are now.
it's like a snowball effect, and it just keeps getting bigger and worse. It feels like. It says, an ACE score is a tally of different types of abuse, neglect, and other adverse childhood experiences. A higher score indicates a higher risk for health problems later on in life. I wonder what the, I wonder what mine is. I'm like,
girl, we're all high on them. We all have a 7 or above.
Damn,
these standardized tests, like, because that's how people understand shit, is that, oh, if we correlate all these numbers, then we can realize that, like, people who have heart disease, people who have diabetes and chronic health issues, oh, they have a lot of trauma too. And it's like, because our food, our environment, mm-hmm. our parents, and all the shit that comes in our lives, like, all of that has been negatively affected. And so, of course, we're going to have all these terrible outcomes.
Yeah.
And I worked with an amazing, amazing supervisor. Her name was Casey. Shout out, Casey. She had a child who had ADHD. And she would always express to us the importance of food. And she would say, my son has ADHD. And I want to make sure that he gets all the care he needs and is not put into some type of system or oppressed for his for his diagnosis. So she was constantly telling us about OT, so occupational therapist, which I had never even heard of. And I was a master's graduate, and I was like, what is an OT? Like, what is this? So an OT is an occupational therapist, and they have different types of sensory support techniques for kids with ADHD. Mm-hmm. So I was like, my mind was blown. Like, why don't all kids have this? Mm-hmm. So we talk about weighted vests, weighted blankets, trinkets that they can have in the classroom. And then she talked about a dietitian. She was like, my child has he's not allowed to have sugar. Like, period. It's just not going to happen. She was like, because he's off the Richter. Mm-hmm. And he can't do his homework. Like, so she had a super strict diet in terms of carbs and all these things, because I was like, oh yeah, carbs turn into sugar. And I'm thinking in my head, like, how did we not know this?
Yeah.
And how come? And like, she's obviously an LCSW. She's well plugged in. She knew about all the tricks of the trade. So she could have tailored, you know, her son's care. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is terrible, because I know how many children need that
have no idea that the fact that, like, we were talking about the retreat, I'm like, it makes sense that I'd had impulse control issues as a kid, because I would eat SpaghettiOs for a week straight because my mom was, you know, gambling at the Hustler Casino. Like, so I'm eating straight up, like, cup of noodles. Like, I don't get me wrong, I had all the best shit. I had all the Doritos. Like, as a kid, you think you're lit. You're like, I got all the shit. Like, I got all the Doritos, all the Cheez-Its, all the fruit roll-ups, all the things.
You're literally lit, because you're off the chain.
Literally lit, okay? And so, but then as you grow up, and then you're like, diabetes, fucking, like, high blood pressure. Like, you just, like, your body is, I feel like my body is stuck in a I don't know, just I can feel the effects of the food. I can feel the effects of the food because I, when I went through my detox, I didn't eat processed nothing. Like, I was eating only, I was trying to eat, like, raw foods and everything, because I was literally nursing myself back to health. Like, I was nursing my body, because after being on Adderall and all those other medications for so long, like, being on Adderall, I lost 60 pounds in the first 2 months that I was on Adderall. And to me, growing up as, like, a chubbier kid, that was who I always wanted to be. And so it was like, oh, fuck, yeah. Like, wait, I got this. And so I did eating. It was just like, and I was constantly shaking because I was like, I also became hypoglycemic. And I was like, when I would eat like half of my food. And then I don't know. I just never had, like, I was never healthy. Although I looked skinny because the food, the fucking pills didn't let me eat. But I mean, I just developed this relationship with food that was just, I don't know, unhealthy. And that definitely comes from childhood. But yes, so mistaking, you know, my inability to impulse control, you know, for ADHD, it's like these things are overlapping. The PTSD, it said that ADHD is the highest, is the disorder that coexists most often with other things.
Yeah, coexists. And I think it's because other people don't like to talk about trauma. They don't like to ask the hard questions. And it was, like, off the radar. Like, people just wouldn't ask.
Yeah.
And then you have therapy with someone, and then a year in, when they build rapport with you, they go, oh, yeah, I was raped when I was 5.
Yeah.
And then you have to, at that moment, as a therapist, you really have to be like, okay, now this is another piece of the puzzle. Like, how does this fit in with their care?
Yeah.
And if they're in tune, they're going to be like, oh, this is not anxiety or depression. Mm-hmm. This is something that stemmed from, because you want to know, did it stem before the trauma or after the trauma?
Yes.
And most of us, I'll speak for myself, but my trauma was pre-verbal. So if this happened when I was 3 and nobody else is really asking me about it, how am I going to, like, really going to know? Mm-hmm. Unless I really know or ask my parents or things like that. And so, for especially for domestic violence, when you're an observer, a lot of people don't see, like, it was like, oh, no, my parents just fought. Like, the amount of times I've heard that from kids where they minimize, because that's part of the PTSD, is that we minimize to kind of just wrap our brains around it and kind of move forward, is that, no, it wasn't a big deal.
Well, and to protect your, because I was told, it was a very well-known thing in my community and in my family and in general, that if you told anybody you want to get taken, you want to get taken, that was exactly what the question was. You want to get taken? Like,
yep, the fear of DCFS coming in your home.
They'll take you.
And for me, I was at there. I actually worked in a program where we came in after DCFS. So it was DCFS mandated therapy, which is a whole nother bag. But I would come in after involvement. So it was kind of like it was a blessing in disguise, because I already knew the bag. The bag is now out, and it's like, so I would always reassure them, like, look, you're already in services. These people already know your story, so don't be scared, because now it's already out. So it's like a level of comfort, because I don't have to pry it out of them.
Yeah.
Everything's already out. Mm-hmm. Everything's out in the open, so I'm here to kind of like collect and let's put this shit back together. And so that was, shout out to that program, because that was definitely needed in a lot of these kids' lives, because they were, you know, distraught. That I would be distraught too if someone came in my house and was like asking my mom, does she take care of me, and the possibility of me being taken away.
Yeah, and not wanting to say the wrong thing, and then having shame and guilt, having shame that they're even there in the first place, and then guilt if you say the wrong thing. It's like, it's way too much for a kid to emotionally be able to handle. Like, the overwhelm of, like a kid taking on all of these adult characteristics or like these adult decisions. Like, it's way too much, and it literally takes your childhood away. Like, it just, you don't get one anymore because you're forced to, you know, I don't know, cover up or whatever it might be.
Trauma does that to begin with. I mean, it does take away our childhood. When I did that workshop with you, the inner child, there was a level of like, holy shit. Like, when was the last time I did all the things that I love? Because there is a level of growing up and being parentified that you take on so early that you don't even realize that you've missed out on your childhood. That you never really had one.
Exactly, yeah.
And so it wasn't until you had us do that activity that I was like, whoa, hold on. I didn't have a childhood.
Yeah, wait. I got to go back on this one.
And so it's allowed me to create a space where I'm like, yeah, these are the things I need to do for my own healing. And it's come in like it's come in bits and pieces, and that was a huge milestone for me. And I bought rollerblades, and I brought my skateboard out, and
rollerblades.
I had mad toys, and I was like, man, I haven't played with my toys in so long. This is so great. But it's those things for trauma that really reminds you that there's joy in your life, that you can have joy in your life, and you can choose to have joy. Because a lot of times with PTSD, it's kind of like overwhelmingly like a story you try to hide or a story you are running from. Yeah. I was actively running from my story, and that training I did, they asked me, you know, like, what do you do for fun? I was like, I run. She looked at me like, yeah, we know. And I was like, what do you mean?
Ooh,
you know?
Damn, she called you out.
She was like, yeah, because runners are running from something. And I was like everything had like some type of symbolism.
Yeah.
In how and why I did it. And I think, like you were saying, like looking for the why, they provided a lot of that for me. They brought it full circle for me. Mm-hmm. So first it was like, no, realizing I dissociated. Then second, it was like realizing I run from everything, and it wasn't just that I had it as a hobby and I'm really good at it. It was that I was actively running from things.
Dude, it's like how you saw, remember when you were telling me that book of like the back problems and all that? Like, it's the same thing. It's like the body keeps score, the body remembers, or the body. Oh man, that's wild to me, because it's like everything always has a root back to the same thing. And it's like, if we just all our kids are gonna be so good. Like, they're gonna be so good. I'm so happy for, I love that for them. I'm so happy for them, because it's like, oh, you have to pay attention to your kids. Oh, you have to talk to them. Oh, their feelings matter. Oh, okay. So what were you saying? You have to believe your kids, like, you have to, these, because they didn't even, for them to not even want to put in the DSM or whatever, like, the word PTSD, like, that's how they were so committed to their own ways that they weren't ready to develop. But I feel like our generation is like, we're not only are we ready to develop, we're ready to do the work to develop, so let's get it on and keep moving, because I'm trying to go forward in life. And that's what I feel like these conversations do for us, because there's someone listening right now that needed to hear this, or that might be even scared of going to therapy. What would you say to somebody who, you know, knows that they have a mountain to climb in terms of confronting their trauma, but really wants to move through it, but is just scared? Like, what would you say to them?
I said, I'm 33 years old, and I've been in this game for 9 years. I didn't start this process until 3 years ago, and I'm in the profession, which is a huge piece of shame that I carry. But when I look around, I realize that it's not just me. It's everybody. And we're all carrying this bag of shame and this bag of, you know, our stuff that we try to hide, but the bags are so damn big that everybody already knows. Mm-hmm. Like, like, if we are real with ourselves, like, we already know what our, what the issue is. We already know what our traumas are. If we look around, everybody has it. And the moment we accept that we're not alone, that we're not the only ones, that's the moment that some type of healing, because that's something else that I'm working with, is that it doesn't have to be therapy, but it has to be something. It has to be,
you have to find
a
something.
Workshop with yeah. Angie. It has to be it has to be a group that you join. It has
a daily
to be
practice.
It has to be something that you create or something that comes to you, because the signs are there. One thing that I learned, and when I finally started looking around and paying attention and getting out of my head, is that the things that I needed came to me. They didn't come with like alarms and like horns, but they floated by. And if I was paying attention, I would grab onto it and I'd be like, oh, look, there's this workshop. Oh, look, this yoga thing has like a tapping therapy. Like, what is tapping therapy? And my curiosities and my gut would lead me to the next thing. So, and it was a very gradual process. I mean, I went to classic therapy because I was trained in it and I somewhat trusted it. So I was like, let me just go here and spill all my beans. But then my gut was like, something's not right. I need something else. So it's like, pay attention to your gut, pay attention to what you need in the moment. Now I haven't been to therapy in like a year or so. So now my gut is like, yeah, but you still need to do things. Mm-hmm. You still need to talk to somebody. So I'll talk to a friend. I'll talk to you guys and cry my eyes out at this retreat. I'll go to a workshop. Like, I have to continuously look for things that are challenging me and waking up the parts of me that I love.
Yeah. Yes.
Even hard, because the shit is hard. Like, no, they're gonna lie to you. Like, some people lie and say, oh my God, look at this magical journey. Like, it's hard.
Ain't nothing magical about it, that's for sure. I ain't been comfortable since I started, but I can tell you that it's the most rewarding thing I have. These gains, like, are just irreplaceable. Like, you can't get them with an accomplishment. You can't get them with a relationship. You can't get them with, like, it's healing generational trauma is the real bag. Secure it.
And anybody who's making excuses, I've heard them all.
I've made them, like, all.
Right? Yeah, because I mean, I made them for 30 years, so I'm like a pro at those. So everyone knows you're bullshitting. Stop bullshitting yourself. That's what I would tell everybody right now, because the only person you're bullshitting is yourself.
That part.
And that's, I think, where the pain lies. Because then one therapist told me, I'm glad you're coming here right now, because you don't want to be 50 and screaming and having a mental breakdown at work. And I looked at her like, oh shit.
You're like, I already did that. That was me, actually. That was me, my bad.
I'm on the brink of that, but I'm like, but that's true. Like, you don't, your bag goes with you.
Yep, wherever you go.
It doesn't care if you want to go to another country, if you want to go to another state, if you plan to go get a doctorate. It doesn't care if you get a new job. It doesn't care. And so the moment you think, like, I need to change this because then I'll feel better. Everything is temporary. Like, you are still yourself. You still have your triggers. You still have your trauma. You still have the funky shit that you do when you're triggered. And that shit will haunt you. And I think the moment I realized that it haunted me and it destroyed my relationships and it destroyed certain friendships and destroyed my ability to have a relationship with my family, I was like, oh, my bag never left.
Yeah, I gotta unpack this shit.
Bullying I did, no matter how many books I read, because I know people out here trying to read 30 books thinking that that's gonna heal them.
Read their way books. into the healing. Yeah,
healing happens in communities, and that can be gradual. I know this is a long explanation for therapy, but it's a gradual process. And sometimes it can be, yeah, you go to traditional therapy with one person, or it could be you start talking to a friend about it and then go to therapy. and then go to people who actually know what they're doing, no matter what it is they're doing. Because some people can't carry your baggage. And I think a lot of us depend on our partners or whoever our go-to person is, and we drown them. Ugh. And you don't want to drown your people, because it's like, you need them. We need our people. And our friends are sometimes too nice to tell us, like, yo, you're drowning me. Like, I can't take this anymore. And it's like, so for our responsibility and accountability, we have to seek an external, I call it like a neutral third party that's gonna listen to our shit and then kind of dice through it and then process it, and then so that you can keep going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On your journey.
It's just like releasing steam along the way so that you don't have an explosion at the end of, you know, your destination or whatever when you get there. Like, you have to have those small releases, because I think what we make the mistake of doing is, like, when we were talking about ADHD versus PTSD, you know, ADHD, diagnosing me with ADHD is treating the symptoms, not the disease. And the disease is trauma, and from that sprouts all these things. But, I mean, if you're only cutting the leaves and you're just, you know, trying to make a difference, it's you got to get to the root of shit and unpack it, kind of like you were talking about. It's like, that's what... So, like, there's no way you're going to look at it. If you're in pain right now, and you can take that however you want, if you're in pain mentally, emotionally, physically, if you're in pain, there's the only way out of it is through it. There's no other way. And you just either have to be willing to get busy living or get busy dying. Because that, when you're living with that pain, that's what it feels like. You're walking around like a zombie. Like, you have no connection to your real life, because you're still stuck in that trauma and pain. And so until you process it, until you're ready to move through it, pain moves through families until someone's ready to feel it. And so us, I think we're trying to feel it, and that does not always feel good at all. Like, most of the time it never does. But let me tell you about the days in afterwards where you feel lighter and you're like, wait a minute, I feel like I have some control over my life. Like, I can do this. Like, there's hope. And that's what I feel like therapy, or like actually really taking therapy seriously and doing energy cleanses and workshops and like putting in this work on myself, has given me the best return on investment I could ever, you know, I could never get with a bottle of wine. I'll tell you that right now.
But one of the things you said was that when you started to take it seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that is a part that all of us, in terms of accountability, we know what's going to make us feel better. It's just a matter of, are you going to put the key in the ignition?
Yeah. Because everybody then you have to do it, and not everybody's ready to do it. Not everybody's ready. That's for sure.
And that's the part when I'm talking about, like, be real with yourself. It's like that part. It's being able to accept that you're not ready. And that's okay. Like, a lot of people think, like they can bullshit their way through things and lie and do this. And it's like, bro, just be honest with yourself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And honest with other people. Like, say, I can't. Like, that, I don't have that in me. Because that integrity will take you further than lying, deceiving people, drinking yourself. I mean, I drank myself numb for years, like 15 years, for sure. 15 years I drank myself numb, and I would bullshit my way through things, and the only person I was hurting was myself. And that's fine. Like, I paid that price. But it's like, if you know that you need this and you're ready to accept that, that's when shit really changes. Shit will never change, because you can't, what was it? You can't fool the universe.
Yeah, you can't.
That's one thing, is you really can't. You can't fool the universe.
Yeah.
The universe knows when you're lying, because when you say something like, I really want abundance, and I really want integrity, and I really want, like, all these things, but you're bullshitting, the universe will be like, nah, sweetie, like, you're not, this is not
aligning. And then you keep on learning, you keep on being presented with the same problem because you refuse to learn the lesson. But I also want to just say that, like, I know this conversation has been valuable, but I know that it has called you out. Whoever's listening, because a lot of times when we get on this topic, I mean, the same way I felt called out by Jen, but also called out in such a way where it made me inspired to talk about this and to share this with my community, because I need all of you to know this stuff. I need you to know that with this, through this work, there's so much hope, like, on the other side of that pain. And not that we're on the other side of it, but we're on our way. And I'll tell you, I'm a lot further than I was. And I know that just, like, having people like Jen in my life talking to me about this stuff is just, like, it's a different level of friendship. And it feels like I'm in a community of other people who want to heal as badly as I do. And that is, like, oh, so refreshing. I feel like this is, like, we're at the some type of winner circle or something. Like, we got here. We got here.
Bro, finally. We're everywhere. And that's, I think that was the moment that I really kind of turned it on, because I was like, oh, I'm not alone. And I really understood that I'm not alone. Because a lot of this trauma will make you, it'll make you really believe that you're the only one going through it. It distorts your thoughts.
Yeah.
Because all you do is talk to yourself in your head all day long about how somebody's not safe, about how you can't trust so-and-so.
Yeah.
And about the moment somebody told me trust is black and white, I was like, what do you mean? Like,
say more.
So somebody was like, no, trust is black or white.
You can either trust someone or you don't.
Either you give it or you don't. And I realized that I was always saying, like, yeah, I'm going to trust you when...
when you do what I want you to do.
Exactly.
Oh, or you I'll did it again. God damn it. Jennifer.
I'll trust you if... and all my trust was tied to something. And that's not real. Either I give it and I'm willing to get my heart broken, my feelings hurt, disappointed. And those are all things that my trauma has deeply created fear for. I hate conflict. I hate being told that I'm wrong or that I'm, because I believe that I'm bad for some reason.
Yeah, like, you internalize it.
Any feedback is like completely internalized and I completely disappear and I go into like hermit mode. So it was like realizing that my trauma had created all these external effects. I didn't have like good relationships with other females. Because I had a mother wound that I hadn't healed. And I was like, I just like hanging out with guys. Like, it's just more secure. And it's like, yeah, because I bullshit too. And I like to bullshit and drink. Like,
yeah. Nothing gets too deep. You're fine there. You're safe from
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And so I wanted my father's love. And so what better than to be around all kinds of males? Because they remind me of my dad.
And they give you approval.
And I could talk about cars and all the shit that he taught me about.
Yeah.
And so it was like this really false idolization for different things. So one of the things I learned is like all my triggers. Like, why do I feel like this around elderly people? And really nitpicking on my triggers. Like, why do I feel this way around women? Why do I feel around this way about white women, brown women, black women, Asian women? And really going down the line and looking for my roots. Like, where did that come from?
Mm.
And getting curious about why I felt the way I felt. And they continuously told me, they had something on the wall that said, stop pretending you don't know.
Ooh.
Or something like that. I could be wrong.
I'm gonna hang up on you, Jen.
The sign kept getting bigger. They're gonna come sue me for letting out their secrets. I was like, wait, why blinking. Is it bigger today, bruh? And I was like, how do they know that I'm not knowing? Like, and every time somebody would say, I don't know, it would call you out. What do you mean you don't know? Like, did you not live? Like, so I think having that moment where somebody kept holding me accountable and making me reflect deeper and deeper and deeper. Because really, when somebody says, stop pretending you don't know, it makes you kind of like think back and it throws the ball back in your court.
Yeah.
So you have to figure it out. Because it's true, we do have the answers. Whether it's through ancestors, whether it's through spirits, whether it's through signs, whether it's through people around you.
Like, therapy is just one way to get to those answers. Like, I think that's great advice, because, like, there's like spiritual practices. I personally practice both at the same time. Like, I'll have a therapy appointment by phone every 2 weeks, and then every month I try my best to get a spiritual energy cleanse. And, like, because it's all about maintenance. Like, in order to stay balanced, like, and Jay-Z said, like, it's called the Red Queen's race. Like, you have to run this hard just to stay in place. And that's exactly what it is for mental health. And I like what you said about, you know, when you got curious about yourself. That's a huge major key alert right there. Like, get curious about yourself. Like, there, all of the things that make you feel like you're suffering or you don't like about yourself even, or even the things you don't like about your family members, because those are really the things you don't like about yourself, those all have whys. And if you get a little bit curious, there are ways that you don't even have to leave your house. You can just start by journaling your feelings.
Uh-huh.
And then going back and reading it later and being like, I didn't even know that was bothering me.
And Instagram is such a great asset. Like, as a therapist, I use it all the time. Like, the amount of therapists who are so dope in doing videos, and the amount of people who are interested in mental health and have been taking this to new levels, like, I commend them so much, because this is that's a huge platform for people to get educated without having to go to an office.
Yes.
If that's not where they want, like, now I'm always like, yo, the excuses have got to go, because there's like everything at our fingertips. It's just low-key scary, but also very like privileged. Like, wow, that's beautiful that there's stuff that I learned in school that's now on Instagram. Like, I can just click
DM
right, and I'm like,
to someone,
this is perfect.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to a library to go find this book that costs $150.
Yes.
Like, it's not, none of that is necessary. And there's people out here really supporting and giving resources, and they're on Instagram, and that's all I see all day. So I'm always like, am I the only one seeing all this stuff? But tailor your feed to do that. If you're into like healing and that's what you want, like, if you look for it, it will come. If you build it, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Really,
you tend to find what you're looking for. And if you're looking for that, like, you know, you can follow, yes, you can follow hashtags on Instagram. So, like, you don't just have to follow accounts. You can follow actual hashtags. So when people post a post that has something to do with healing and they hashtag healing, it'll come up on your feed. And you don't necessarily have to be following that person. So, like, I follow all that shit. I follow healing, gratitude, like, because then randomly when you're scrolling, you just get, like, these little positive doses, you know? And it's, like, that can never hurt you, like... If you're gonna be on social media, like, try to tailor it as much as you can. Like, try to, you know, control it as much as you can, because these images, like, it's almost like we're inundated with all of these images that are poisoning us. And whether that means comparing and despairing against someone who has nowhere near the same type of life as you, like, or someone who's fronting, like, we're comparing ourselves, like, it just constant. It's a constant thing. Even if you, like, think you're not, it gets in there somewhere. It seeps in, like, to your brain. And you, even if you're just like the most anti-beauty standard bitch in the world, like, you could be the wokest bitch ever and still, like, have something about yourself that's like social media is just not helping with, you know, because this just false idea of perfection. But anyways, side note, we went on a whole different bar, but I just feel so grateful for this conversation and, like, people like you in my life that I can have these conversations with, because I feel like I feel like us learning from each other and then being able to, like, leave this conversation for other people to hear, because I wish I would have heard things like this. I mean, I don't know if it would have made a difference, because I was kind of, like, really into my whole spiral phase, but, like, I don't know. I think if I would have heard somebody say, like, you know, all of the things you don't like about yourself, that there's a reason why. I just thought I was how I was. I just thought people were how they were. And that was just what you had it. That was what you are, and you just move on with your life, and you have to exist in the world as that type of person. And guess what? Newsflash, that's not true.
Sure.
You can live a happier, healthier
Amen.
Life.
Amen. Thank you.
And it's only up to you if you want to try. And so I thank you, Jen, for being with me today. You're the best. You're the bomb. You're the baddest. Do you have anything you want to add?
I appreciate it. There's so much.
You're like, well, but, part two of the podcast will be coming tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm like, there's so much I didn't hit, but like, I know that that's just my own stuff. Like, I have to, like, I'm like, I gotta fit in everything.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
What if I didn't inform the people enough? And yeah. It's like, I'm always open to questions. I always say that social media is kind of like my underground railroad of therapy. They'll like questions, and it's like I'm always open to answer questions, and anybody can message me, and I'm more than willing to like break down how to get a therapist, depending on what your needs are, or if you need any support. Like, I'm always open to that, because I know there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of things that I didn't mention. But
if you still,
I'm always open still, to that.
I'm still listening.
Free of therapist.
I'm still. Is there any resources or anything you would like to share with the Mijas out there listening?
I think there's something for everybody out there, and depending on what your needs are, and it's okay to, it's okay to express your needs too. Like, saying like, I don't want therapy, like, I want something else. Like, what are the other recommendations?
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask questions, and I'm always open to questions. I'm sure Angie is too. So my DMs are open for that.
Can you give us your IG name?
Well, I don't even know it.
It's Jen. I don't know. And there's, it's like Jenny. Dots.
It's Jenny Jen Jen, because somebody at work used to call me that, and I was like, that's catchy.
Jenny Jen Jen. It's cute, but there's like dots. So I
Jenny
don't know
Jen Jen, JENNIE dot JEN dot JEN. So Jenny Jen Jen. And you're not alone. That's like the biggest thing I want to hone in, is that you're not alone. And there's a lot of us trauma babies. I call us trauma babies. There's a lot of us trauma babies out there, and sometimes they're in our very groups because we attract unconsciously each other. Because when I started to ask my friends, or I started to be open about the traumas that I experienced as a child, all of a sudden I started to realize like everyone in my circle had their parents had also had experienced, or they had experienced domestic violence at home too. And I was like, bruh, how did all 10 of us?
Yeah, and no one said anything until now.
No one ever said anything, and we're in our 30s now. And these are people I went to college with. These are people, like, I grew up with. I basically became a young adult with them. And yeah. None of that had ever been said until we were, like, 30-something. And it's amazing to me that I could know people for that long and not ask.
People for that long. Because exactly. How do you know someone? I mean, yes, you can, but there's a door that opens into getting to know someone when you can share things like that. And that's the path into a real relationship. Because without sharing those types of things, you just have this kind of like surface level guarded experience, because you're not safe yet. And so a real relationship happens with that kind of sharing.
And that sharing, or vulnerability, whatever you want to call it, when the moment you share that, it pushes like a relief button on everybody else, because it makes it okay for everybody else to open up about it. It makes it okay for people to share. And everyone is different, so it might take them a few more weeks than somebody else. But what I notice is that everyone in my friend group, like all 10 of us, fell like eventually.
Yeah.
And it was like, That opening that happened has forever changed us. And we're all like family now. Like, those people are like the sisters and the siblings that I never, well, I have, but that I always wanted. And yeah. And it's like a different type of relationship, like you said. But it just took one person to fucking share.
Yeah.
Just like it takes one person to ask a question that everyone's dying to ask.
In class, yep.
Like, that's how I see trauma. And you will be forever surprised by it. Because everyone around you, I promise you, y'all are attracted to each other for a reason.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it's for the same reason.
When we're vulnerable, we give permission to other people to be vulnerable. Just like when we shine our light, we give permission to others to do the same. This was such a valuable conversation for me. I really, really appreciate you being my friend and just for like being a really intelligent human being that offers these services to people that are like invaluable. Like, you can't even put a price on these things that you do for people, because I know that without this kind of trauma-informed care, I know that I it's a possibility that I wouldn't be here. And I thank you on behalf of your clients, because as someone who, you know, feels saved by this. So I appreciate you so, so, so much. I'm about to cry a little bit, so don't look at me.
I didn't cry today, which is so damn weird. I'm usually the
You're like, my crying. Daily cry hasn't came out yet.
I'm like, girl, I appreciate you. I appreciate you being, because there's one thing that Angie knows is that I am definitely afraid of like public speaking or speaking in general. I'm usually the last one that speaks.
It's the most to say.
And so I'm trying to like, that's part of my journey, is doing the opposite of what I usually do. And so this is the opposite for me. And it's super comfy, and Angie makes that comfy environment for everybody, and she always makes me feel safe. And so I appreciate you for making me feel safe enough to be myself and share all the call outs on everybody, on all the systems in here.
Yeah.
And it's just, and feeling safe, please nobody take my job away, thank you.
Yeah, we'll omit your last name. Nobody has right. to know. Or maybe we should send it directly to your boss. Maybe one or the other. I don't know which one. I'm down to do both. Right,
do it.
Special delivery. No one has ever heard Jen speak, and then they're about to hear her speak. Like, they're about to hear her say it all.
Girl, every time I quit a job, I would go ham.
You finally say everything?
Bro, yeah, I was like, I've been holding this for 3 years. Are you ready? Like, you know, like, the first girl almost cried. I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, man.
It was like, what did you tell her? She left for the day. And I was like, and that's something I'm working on, too. That's a PSA. I know, fam. I'm trying to work on it. I'm trying to
You're like, I told her the truth.
Yeah, I hold it until I, like, I'm the volcano. I erupt. So now I'm just like, I'm just going to release and share as it comes. But girl, when I quit a job, I don't
leave. You burn that bridge, that's for sure. You burn it down. Burn it. May the bridges I burn light the way.
They have. It's been beautiful. It's been beautiful so far. So I know the next one is going to be real, real big.
What are you going to do for the rest of the night? You.
What am I going to do for the next one?
No, for the rest of the night.
Oh, I'm at my grandma's house. Oh, check out my... So I was tripping out because I did this...
Vision board?
Oh, yeah. Vision boards. I did this in whenever, January, February, December. Bro, look at what's in it.
Trees! Wow.
Look at this picture.
That's like the picture you took.
Bruh, it was creepy. I haven't been here. I haven't been at this house for since the pandemic started. Damn. So this is like my original home. So my grandma lives here. And so my room is intact, like how I left it in March. It was like weird, like eerie.
Yeah.
But I looked at this. I hadn't looked at it since February, maybe.
There's even trees on the top. Trees.
There's
and
trees
just nature in
everywhere,
general.
Everywhere, like a yeah. whole forest.
Wow.
And then home, it was like, I knew I was going to be in a pandemic. I was going to be home.
Stay home, border.
I was like, and then exercise. I was like an exercise-aholic. Mm-hmm. It was the only thing that can calm my like cortisol levels after work. Mm. And so that's another part I didn't talk about, is like a lot of the physical stuff. But
oh yeah,
I was like, exercise is not a one-size-fits-all. And now I haven't, like, my exercise routine is like mad random. Like, I do these random FaceTime exercise things at 7:30 a.m. with my friends. Like, that's what I do.
7:30 a.m. huh?
You can join me.
I'm just curious as to why does it have to be so damn early, like,
because then everyone starts work around 9, I think. I started at 10, so it gives me some time to like shower and
yeah.
So
wow, I love you so much, and I'm glad you're my friend, and I love seeing your vision board, and
Creepy.
I know, creepy. No, but like the trees thing has come up in so many other people's thing, like that. But people don't realize it till later, and then I'm like, yeah, this is like, this is bigger than us. I don't know what it is, but this is bigger than us. And when we figure out what it is, I mean, we're all gonna know we were onto something good. But I just can't wait, because I feel like we created magic, and like it's not just isolated to that weekend. Like, it's gonna continue. We're continuing it right now. Like, literally, this conversation couldn't have happened without us having the conversation we had up there.
Yeah, I'm super, super grateful. I'm super grateful for that. I didn't, because my procrastination too. I didn't do the voice memo. I wanted to send Felicia, then I had it on my to-do list, and I kept like
bumping. Oh, yeah, it's okay.
But I need to do it. I want to do it, because it was really, really a part of my journey. I mean, I think I told you. Like, I had been doing it mostly by myself, and then I was like, no, I need to do this in a group.
Yeah.
And then there was like a mother wound, somebody was talking about the mother wound and like the female sisterhood, the sisterhood wound.
Yeah.
I think it was. And they were like, the original sisterhood wound. And they were like, people who don't hang out with other women, it's because of the original sisterhood wound. Which is usually like your mother or somebody, a woman in your life that broke your heart. Mm. And so you could never trust them again. Mm-hmm. And I had hella sisterhood wounds.
Yeah. Same.
And so from friends that I just, like, I felt like, you know, like a breakup. Like, that's how I feel like if I lose a sister.
Same.
Yeah. And so I was like heartbroken for so long by my mom, my aunt. So I was like, that's why I don't trust women. It's because my heart's been broken by them. Mm-hmm. And so this retreat, it clicked after. I was like, I'm getting over it. It was like a piece of my puzzle. Mm-hmm. Like that trust and that, and even meeting you and like us meeting together and talking, and like, that's been a part of me trusting in other women again and being like, nah, I'm okay. Like, and if my heart gets broken again, like, that's fine. Like, I'm gonna survive.
I'm strong enough to figure it out. Yeah.
And then, so I was like, oh, this is meant to be. And like, I'm hanging out with my mom more often, and I'm taking care of my grandma's on Monday, so I'm with her like all day. And so it's like, like all of the things, like divine timing, like came like, yeah, perfectly,
as they always do. It's like that's what anxiety is like, being, we're too far in the future, and depression is that we're too far in the past. And it's like, being present is the whole point of therapy, is learning how to be present. It's like learning
how to that be was mad.
It's on there too.
Bruh, this is it. Are you present?
Wow.
Because that was my shit. Is the last therapy, like, I had tapping therapy, and she was like, get out of your head. She was like, please. She was like, and be kind to yourself. Every time you go in there, just know, like, you're seeking safety. And just remind yourself you're safe, and you're not in, like, some type of battlefield that you feel that you are in.
Yeah.
And so it was a way of me, she was making me be nicer to myself when I did go in, because I would get so mad, like, I'm dissociating again, like, when is this gonna end?
Yeah.
And it was like, she was like, be nice to yourself, and just bring yourself right back.
Yeah.
Hold your hand, right, come right back, and then just be there.
Wait, tapping? I don't know about that.
So that one, she's dope as fuck, too. She was through that training thing I did, but she owns a yoga studio and she does tapping therapy. So it's like more for the physical, especially us who dissociate, who need like physical touch. So like, so you do this to yourself on multiple points of your body and you talk. So you're doing therapy, and while you're doing therapy, you're doing this. And then they tell you like where to put your hands. And it's kind of like,
what if you can't concentrate? I feel like I couldn't concentrate if I was doing this.
Yeah, because you end up concentrating, because you just start talking and you're like, crying. You're like, crying and like processing. Wow. And so it kind of helps you stay in your body instead of going away.
Yeah.
So it's a way for you to kind of bring them together, your mind and your body. because a lot of times you're just, if you dissociate, I can just like talk and I'm like, duh, duh, duh,
duh. And you can find all this at the place you said, Soul Tenders.
The tapping therapy was solo. She does like topics, like whatever you want to hit. She'll do like 5 sessions for $500. So she does like credit card, cash, or whatever, and then you do 5 sessions with her.
What about the Soul Tenders?
Soul Tenders, they take Medi-Cal, they take Kaiser, I think. Those two and one other one, I can't remember. But Soul Tenders it's right there in Monrovia, next to the Trader Joe's. And there's another one in like San Marino, and they're a provider. And you just call them and ask for a referral, and
I'm going to do that tomorrow. That sounds good. I'm going to try that.
Their EMDR, I know their list is probably long, but if you can get in there and then transfer to an EMDR therapist later, you know?
Yeah.
So at least so like you're in the door, and then
you ask for a referral from your Medi-Cal therapist?
I would just call them directly.
Yeah.
I go straight to the source.
Yeah. Like, I ain't fucking around. I need to get it done.
Do you guys take Medi-Cal? And then I'll ask them like which locations, do all locations take Medi-Cal, and what's your wait list? I would just get on a wait list if there is one. Because they're bomb, dude. I love them. The therapist that I had left, like right as I ended EMDR, I think the universe wanted me to get off the teat. So I was like, she's the best. I never wanted to. Like, she was mad comforting.
Yeah.
And she was a white lady, which I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But she was like from Texas. She reminded me of Brene Brown, bro. Like, literally looked like her. She had boots like her. I was like,
no, because I'm telling you, Brene Brown is the white mother I never had. I'm telling you, like,
man, that's auntie right there. She's auntie. I love her to death.
Unlocking Us, this is a major shout out to Brene Brown's podcast, Unlocking Us. Me and Jen send episodes back and forth, and it's a life-changing podcast, so please do yourself a favor and listen to it. I would start with the Alicia Keys interview with Brene Brown about her talking about her book, More Myself. It is a great interview, and it's a great introduction into the stuff she talks about, which is unlocking yourself, you know, like that deep stuff that you need to get through. But she's just such a comforting soul that it's beautiful. She just makes you feel like held and you don't even know her.
Right, and that's the mama social work. That's like, she's like the queen bee of all social workers. Like, that's who everyone should strive to be. And if you're a social worker, you better be listening to her leadership podcast, because we need to change the game. Because the game is broken.
The game is rigged.
The game is hella broken. That shit broke down.
Yep.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I was like, I've never seen worse leadership in my entire life. And we're all social workers. I was like, y'all should be ashamed of yourselves, because I'm ashamed to be a social worker in a time like this.
You mean just the way they've handled people, like, care-wise?
The way they've handled us, their own employees. Mm-hmm. They haven't handled us at all.
Okay, well, we need to end anyway. So it's 6:30, so we have a long-ass podcast, but we have lots of sub podcasts that are going to come out of this one, I feel like. So, yeah.
I'm so, because there's so much. And there's, yeah. Yeah, we should definitely get together and brainstorm.
Yeah, we could go hiking.
Yes, please.
All right.
Okay. Love you, Angie. Thank you.
Love you more. Bye.
It's a motherfucking millennial Miha podcast.